Panic and Treat the Podcast is a personal podcast produced for informational and entertainment purposes only. The content reflects the host's opinions and personal experiences as new graduate nurses. It does not constitute professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
All patient details have been changed or left out to protect privacy in accordance to HIPAA guidelines. Any resemblance to real people is purely coincidental. The point of views in this podcast are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers, schools, or any organizations we are connected to. For health concerns or concerns of a general nature, please talk to a qualified professional. And with that, let's get started.
Hey besties, this is Alora, and we are back with part two of So Many Ways to Nurse. The episode was getting just a little bit long last week, so we decided to split it up into two parts for you guys. Just a little recap. Remember last week we were talking and we finished up on surgical and PACU and same day surgeries. And now we're heading on to a new specialty. Get ready.
Speaking of very long orientations, let's move into mother baby then.
Oh, yes.
That's also another one that has a ridiculously long orientation. I think anywhere you go, because I've talked to a couple different people from a couple different states and they all said that they're like... their orientation was like a year long at least.
Yeah, because don't they, I think at our hospital they specialize in women's and children. So they learn all
they cross trained. Yeah, so we have like three different places, four, I guess technically. So you have the mother baby like delivery unit. Mm-hmm. So where you're actively delivering the child. You've got the surgical team. So that's like your NICU surgical stuff. So mm-hmm. you literally train to be an OR maternity nurse for the C-sections and preterm births.
Yep.
And then you've got...
they have the NICU.
And then you have the NICU. So, but those are, they're kind of like the same thing. Like the OR and the NICU people. Like they're like the same person.
Are they the same person?
Okay. Yeah, because they like... it's just like very...
well, and I know there's different levels to NICUs. I don't know what level ours is.
Not a super... it's not the high one.
It's not the like high one.
I think it's a two.
Yeah, I know a lot of our babies go to Denver.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I think we're like a two, because I think they have to be born after 36 weeks here to be considered,
okay for our NICU.
Okay for our, is it 34?
I don't know.
Either way, I'm not well versed. Yeah. And then we have like the post-maternity side where you've just had your baby and you're being monitored over there. So it's
postpartum.
Like, postpartum, there we go. I was like, I don't know what I just said even then. So that's technically four, isn't it? Yeah, delivery,
OR, NICU. Oh, and then they NICU. Get trained in peds.
And then Pete's, yes. I forgot to do the beads. Yes. That's like five different things that they cross-train in. That way they can be able to do anything. And it's like a year long, at least.
Yeah, one of the girls in our new grad class is on the mom and baby unit.
She loves it there, though.
We love her.
And she's such a mom baby nurse.
We love her. She's perfect. And then, actually, there's two, because one of our classmates is there, too, now.
Yeah, but she just joined.
Yes, she just joined our cohort. Shout out. We love you. we don't know a whole lot about there. I went down there when they opened her because we got our women's and children's services got a remodel a couple years.
It's been 2 years.
It's
such a fancy.
Oh, it's beautiful down there. They did such a good job. Mm-hmm. They did such a good job. The moms and babies are well taken care of there.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of attaching to that. How many babies did you see on your
I saw three day? Delivered on my day that I was there.
So our school, since we went to an ADN program, we only got a short, very short 1 day on labor and delivery.
Yeah.
I saw absolutely nothing.
I was going to say, most people say this, I saw three.
She called me, she was like, I'm never having a baby.
I saw three babies born, and like everybody was like, that was so jealous. And you guys, I am not a mother baby nurse.
No,
vaginas scare me.
No.
And I told everybody from the start, so I was hoping my day was gonna be slow and nothing was gonna happen, and I held a leg for one of them, and I felt
you did so good.
I felt this lady push, and oh my god, it's such a funny story. I felt so bad. I don't think anybody else heard it but me, so I'm literally holding the leg, because mm-hmm. my preceptor was like, get in there, and I was like, what the fuck do you mean,
get in there? She's like, you got this, girl.
So I'm holding this leg, and she says, okay, because, you know, you have to have them, like, on your shoulder, and you, like, push in with them, that mm-hmm. way they can, like, you know, push.
Bear down.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not exactly sure why we do that, but whatever works. They're the bosses.
You told me what to do.
I just hold the leg, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why was the husband not holding the leg? Listen, men can do it. You can do it. I'm like,
hello. I should not be holding this leg, but I was holding the leg because
you did it.
Husband was terrified in the corner, and the mother-in-law, like this poor girl, was like, "You are not allowed to see my vagina." So she's sitting in this corner,
mortified.
I wouldn't want my mother-in-law seeing my vagina either.
Would you let your mom go in there?
Yeah. But okay. I wouldn't let you though, because you'd be looking at my vagina.
Girl, you know way too much. That would be a secret I would take to my grave.
I don't need it. Okay, you can't look at my vagina though.
I wouldn't look. I gotta see one baby.
Oh my god. But anyway, so I'm holding this leg and we're pushing, right? And it was like crazy because it was her second kid and nobody told me that. Usually, when you have more than one kid, they come a little faster. Three pushes. Looked so calm because she had the epidural. And I was like, you make childbirth look so easy. But on that third push, this kid just like slipped out, slipped inside style, like right into the doctor's arm. And all you heard from me was, oh my God. Like, as I'm holding the leg and I'm making the craziest little fucking face.
You're like, I can't.
I was like, oh, that was disgusting. I'm so sorry to that lady. Thank you for letting me be in the room. To watch the birth of your child. I'm so sorry.
She probably doesn't even remember you.
Absolutely not. Probably not. But, you know, they're clapping all at the same time. So I don't think anybody heard me, but I was like, hold.
Thank you so much.
It was actually probably one of the coolest learning experiences I've ever seen. But in the moment, I was not comfortable. I was so unwell. And then I watched a forceps birth where they literally like take the giant salad tongs and they help like pull them out because they almost thought they were gonna have to do the vacuum suction. Didn't have to. They figured it out.
So scary.
And then there was one more that she actually ended up being a C-section, but it was like later in the day, so I didn't get to watch the C-section, which was okay. I didn't want to get all gowned up because they were going to make me do like the whole like scrub in thing too. That way it could be closer. But I was like, I'm okay. That's not my thing.
I want to go home.
I know. I do kind of feel bad because I know so many people would have wanted to see that, but I was like, that's probably already really traumatic for her. I think I'm going to just step away from that. But so as a mother baby on the delivery side, you are watching so many things at once. So you have a much lower ratio. So it's like you and the mother and the baby. So like technically 1-2, but because you're watching mom and baby, right? Yeah,
they call them couplets.
Yeah, couplets. So you're watching because they've got like the fetal ultrasound thing on top of them at all times on the belly. So you're watching the contractions and you're watching, I think that's what it is. Like you're watching just like their uterus and like see when they're contracting.
Yes.
You're timing how long the contractions are.
And the heart rate. Mm-hmm. The fetal heart rate. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're watching that and you're watching that like every 15 minutes.
Those fetal heart strips,
And it's crazy just how much you're doing at one time, and then you're helping the mom and you're giving pain meds and you're doing all the other meds. Like if you're giving Pitocin or maybe magnesium or like fluids.
Well, in the postpartum, you're like watching for them for hemorrhaging and all of that. That whole area just sounds so stressful because, you know, in like babies and kids, when they go south fast.
Yeah.
And it's,
And they have, like their own baby team versus their own, like, because like when you're on the mother baby side, you're focused specifically on the mother after the birth too. So you're watching all the way up and you're doing all these little things up until the birth. And then you're contacting the doctor and you're like, hey, this baby's going to come here. So you're doing that, you're helping with the actual birth, you're charting while she's giving birth because you have to, you're timing when the head comes out and you're timing how quick the contractions are and you're timing any meds you're giving during it. You're timing when the baby came out, you're timing when it took its birth. Yeah, there's literally like 10 million people in there at all times. And then as soon as the baby comes out, you have the baby team who's specifically caring for the baby and you're caring for mom postpartum. And making sure like her uterus is okay. Yeah. I don't even know what I'm feeling for. That lady was so nice. Like I did the fundal massages and everything that they do. And the nurse was teaching me how to do it and what to feel for. I don't know what she was feeling.
Well, when
our one friend, I just know that she said I was doing it right. So I was like, okay.
Our one friend was pregnant when we did our mom baby unit. And I was like, can I touch your fundus? And she was like, Jessica, get out of here.
And yeah, like it's a whole different ball game. And then, you know, on the postpartum side, like Jessica said, like they're watching for bleeding and they're watching to make sure the baby's latching and they're watching to make sure nothing's wrong with the baby either.
We had a postpartum mom that was like a couple weeks postpartum on our floor and she was still having trouble breastfeeding and they were like, you have to,
My poor preceptor, I love her. They were like, you have to go in and help her pump. And she was like, oh, what? She's like, that is out of my scope. No.
Say who?
She was like, I have to do what? We ended up calling the Ellen Dee nurses, and they were so kind. They came up and helped us and actually taught us something, because we were like, it's a boob. We don't know.
Literally, shout out to all our Ellen Dee nurses.
Yeah, they were so, they're so gracious and nice to us.
Well, the thing is, too, and one of the nurses was telling me is that, a lot of the times, like, the ER sees a pregnant person and immediately just sends them up to, you know, the mother-baby ward.
Yeah.
Even though maybe they don't need to be there. But yeah. I'm like, but I'm looking at them like, I don't want to deal with
that. I don't want to deal with it either. I don't know.
No, I'm like, what if that mother goes into birth?
I wonder how many, I would like to see the numbers of how many moms have had a baby in our ER just because they could. There wasn't enough time to get them up there.
I was going to say, because they're all trained to deliver babies down there, too, because it's such a frequent occurrence.
Is it? Oh, my God.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So if you want to do that, and a lot of the times, I will say it's a very competitive field, nursing students, new grads. Yeah, so
I feel like a lot of people like moms and babies.
Yeah, so advice, probably get in touch with whoever's running that shindig. Mm-hmm. Become friends. Tell them, let them see how much you're wanting to do this. Yes. Do some shadowing hours.
You know, we did the, we got to see the OBGYN clinic, mm-hmm. like the outpatient clinic where you go and do all your checkups in the gynecology clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, I've had bad luck at clinicals all of the days. I didn't get to see a lot of cool stuff that a lot of other people got to see. But one thing we did was the, like, the intake appointment. I don't want to call it. That sounds like jail.
Kind of
sounds like jail. the confirmation of pregnancy. There we go. And so they
got like the 30,000 questionnaire of like your entire life.
Yes. And it's, so they like do the lab tests, like the blood and the pee and all of that, to make sure you're actually pregnant. They do like the Doppler, see if they can, like, just to kind of like gauge like how far along you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the RN takes the patient into, like, they see the doctor, all that. And then they have an RN, because it was mostly staffed by MAs, but they had two RNs. And the one I was with, she sat down and did like all of the education and gave them this like giant folder with the parents and was like, okay, here are your options. Like, do you guys want to do genetic testing? Do you want, like, just kind of like went through all of that with them and like,
I must say, I
educated them on that. And then the doctor like told them what he thought they needed. You know?
I got to do one of those too. And I feel like it's so awkward sitting in there as a student, because I'm just sitting in my chair in the corner listening to these two entire life story, adding nothing to the conversation.
Because
I'm like, I'm just here to listen.
No, I thought it was really awkward because, like, the mom, obviously in Colorado, weed's legal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the mom very clearly admitted that she does that. And of course, like, we're not Colorado. And the nurse felt so awkward because she didn't want to be judgmental, but she was like,
do that
here.
It's illegal. FYI.
She had to like do this whole education on like weed cessation. I was like, oh my God.
You're like,
let adults make their own decisions.
Literally.
It was literally awkward.
Oh gosh, that's crazy.
Did you get to do at public health on the maternal?
I did not.
What did they call it? It was like maternal and children's stuff. And they do I'm sure a lot of states have this, but our state has safe plans of care. So if you get a mom who like does illicit drugs or is like the baby's born addicted to alcohol or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
or it's just like they come from like not a safe home,
mm-hmm.
they work with the mom and the doctor and whoever else needs to be involved, like a case manager or whatever. And they're like the case manager for it, and they help design or develop the safe plans of care for the baby and the mom. They also do where they go out and visit the moms pretty frequently.
I was supposed to go do that, but she was running late that day, so we couldn't.
Oh, it was pretty cool because they go out and do like home visits, and they follow these kids up until like 2 years old. So you have that like extra person for support besides your doctor. You know, like the pediatrician, like you have somebody that you can call and ask questions as a mom. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. But I think public health is so underrated.
Health is so cool.
I think it's very underrated for, like, a non-bedside nursing job. Yeah. I'm just like, you get to do so much.
And I really
you still get to, like, interact with people so often. It's just not in, like, a skills kind of manner.
Yes. I really liked the preventative medicine side of it. Like, yes. It was preventative. But we got to go to the hospital with that nurse, and they do visits where they, like, kind of, I don't want to say recruit, but they try to, like, sign people up for that program and get people interested in it so that they have that support for their babies when they go home. Because I feel like a lot of people just go home and they don't have the support they need. And that's when, like, things happen, you know.
Well, and they also screen for postpartum depression, too.
Yes,
like, they screen for that. That's one of their really big things.
They bring toys for the baby every time they come. Because our friend that had the baby, she obviously signed up for it because she's into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But they bring a toy and a book for every visit.
That's very cute.
Yes. And they're developmentally appropriate things. So I thought that was really cool. Like, a little aspect of it, that they have the funding to be able to do that for all of the moms.
Yeah, new grads, if you're not looking for, like, a bedside specific job and you're like, oh gosh, what can I do that's not bedside? Mm-hmm. Literally go find a public health or, like, one of those clinics outside of town and so go work one of those instead.
So fun. And I got sent, our classmates either went to hospice or they went to public health for 2 days instead of just one. And I was one that had to go for 2 days at public health. And so we also got to do the vaccine clinic.
Mm-hmm. I was there on the flu clinic day and we did nothing.
Really?
Not a single flu shot to be given.
Oh my gosh. So they do travel consults as well, mm-hmm. which I think not a lot of people know about, but if you're going to a foreign country, you should go get a travel consult done at a public health office because mm-hmm. they will tell you. We did one and the guy was going to Ireland.
When they tell you, like, what vaccines you
need
to get,
like, right? What's going on in that part of the world. So he went to Ireland and then he went somewhere in the Amazon in the same year. And so he was, like, getting all of his vaccines for that. But part of where he was going was having, like, a typhoid outbreak. Mm. So I got to get a typhoid vaccine.
Crazy.
It was cool.
Yeah.
And then what else? I gave a measles one and something else that was, like, outbreaking in that part of the world. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool just to kind of, like, watch her go through and, like, look at his records of what he had and then look at what he needed. And then we went and talked about, like, all of the different vaccines that they have because they have, like, a supply of a certain amount of vaccines and stuff.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. I feel like not a lot of people got to get vaccines when they were there in our class. And then
I didn't. That's okay. I didn't do anything. Really? Nobody came in.
Oh my gosh.
It was like, it wasn't like flu. I went really early though. So it wasn't like flu season, flu season
yet.
Yeah. So it was just like, God, it was like right at the beginning of like September.
Semester. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, we did nothing all day long. It was fun though. The girls were very nice.
Yes. They explained so much to me. It was really cool. Did you do the family planning clinic?
Side on the other side?
Yeah, so like...
because I only have one day, so it was like half on the flu clinic side.
And half on the other.
And the lady was running late, so I didn't get to do anything.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I got to watch an IUD insertion, an IUD removal, and then...
I have the next one on. Like, same thing, different body part.
Right. So I got to watch those, and then they did... they do like STD testing and stuff there, so I got to watch them do that. What else in that building? Oh, Crossroads. The Crossroads Clinic.
Yeah, they don't have that anymore.
Oh, yeah, they lost funding for that. Mm-hmm. It was a really cool thing. I wish we could get funding back for that. But it was like a clinic where the unhoused.
Unhoused
is the correct word. They can go and get, like, treatment mm-hmm. at either a discounted rate or for free, depending. Like, they do, like, a sliding scale payment system there, which I think is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But they had, like, patients who weren't technically unhoused, but they were just, like, on the lower income of sides and they needed help, and they made sure, like, people stayed on their meds, you know, like, their life-saving meds. Like, they would provide,
I know,
like,
a couple people that really needed that.
Yes. And I'm upset about it that we lost the funding for that, but it was pretty cool because they had a mobile health clinic. Mm-hmm. And I got to go on the bus and we went down to our local homeless shelter and did outreach there. And I went in November, so there was, like, a lot of, like, people who were, like, actually, like, sick. And mm-hmm. so they got to see a provider there. It was really cool.
Yeah. We highly recommend if you're looking for non-nursing jobs. we should do more about non-nursing or non-bedside jobs.
Yes.
Because I know we're doing a lot of, like, specialty stuff today.
Yeah.
Maybe we can research more about, like, non-bedside stuff specifically that you
find
can...
find some friends to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
All right. Next.
So, what else did we do? Oh, population health. Did you get to do that one?
What was that one?
That one was pretty cool. It was in the same building as the maternal children medicine.
Girl, I had one day, I did nothing.
Oh, let me tell you about this one. This one was pretty cool. So, do you know what Ryan White is? The Ryan White case?
Mm-mm.
So it was a man who got, I'm pretty sure, I have to look this up, you guys, but I'm pretty sure he ended, anyway, he had HIV. And basically, it was like this legislation that came in because he was unable to access medication to treat his HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And so this program will, they go through, and it's like, the guy that does it at our public health clinic is like a case manager for these patients. And he like reaches out to them and helps them fill out all of the paperwork mm-hmm. to be in this program, the Ryan White program. So that was pretty cool. So I got to watch one of those. Very, very, very confidential. So if you guys like have patients that are like newly diagnosed with HIV or anything like that, definitely recommend them to go find that person in your community because they are very well versed and those HIV meds are very expensive. Yes, and they get them funding, yeah.
All right.
And then I got to, he also does like home check visits on like patients who are like homebound.
Yeah.
Kind of. Like not, it's not home health, but it's like, they go out and make sure they have, like, all of their Medicaid paperwork filled out.
I did go with somebody to do that.
Yeah.
Except they didn't tell me we were doing that. So we just walked out of the building. And he was, like, and she was, like, get in the car. And I was like, ow.
One of the girls.
I thought I was being kidnapped.
But the girls.
I found out that I literally can't say no because I was like, cool. I mean, get in the car.
I was told what we were doing, but... one of the girls in her class said that one of the guys that works in that department was gave her a piece of candy and told her to get in the car. I was like, that's how you get kidnapped.
She did.
Yeah, I know. No, nobody warned us in our program that that was happening, but, like, I'm a question asker, so the guy explained to me what we were doing that day, and I was like, oh, okay, like, it's fine, I'll get in the car.
Didn't know.
It's fine.
I was just like, cool.
We did go to some shady neighborhoods, but I was like, should we be here?
Yeah, but it's the name of the game, right?
Right,
name
it was
of the
fine.
Game. All right, moving on.
We did a day at the... Were you the one that got to see the toenail removal at the family medicine practice?
I mean, I have seen a couple.
Yeah, that... We did family medicine, and it was just like a family medicine clinic.
Yeah. I mean, I saw mine at the VA, though, at the podiatry clinic.
The VA was so fun.
And that was crazy. Because, folks, my number one thing in life is always check your feet.
Even if you're not diabetic.
Like, if you're diabetic, you have slower healing wounds, especially in the feet and the hands. But even if you are not diabetic, check your feet, man.
Yeah.
Because we had so many people that were non-diabetics coming in for foot issues that just because, you know,
I saw
like
so
the older,
many weird feet issues. At the
like, the older you get, the less circulation you have. It. And this one guy, he came in, he had this tiny little, like, pinprick spot on his toe. He was like, it's just not healing. And she had, like, this really, because I had a female doctor.
Uh-huh.
She was so knowledgeable. Literally coolest lady in the world. But she took this long, like, metal toothpick-looking thing, because they use it to mm-hmm. assess the depth of the wound.
Yes.
And, she, like, if you poke it and you feel resistance, it's not very deep at all, straight into the bone. And he couldn't even feel it.
Oh, my God.
Like, that's how bad the wound was. Like, it was all the way to the bone. And he ended up acting... And they went from talking about, like, debriding the wound and putting a little Band-Aid on to
your...
The toe's gotta go. And I sat there.
Whirlwind
of a conversation for 30 minutes.
Welcome to being a student.
And I was like, oh, my God. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get your feet checked.
No, I saw a lot of weird feet stuff at the family clinic, and I was like, oh my gosh, like more than I see at work. Like, you see a lot of we see a lot of weird feet stuff here just because of our weather.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I was like, oof. But
yeah,
it was. I saw a lot of feet stuff at the family clinic. And I saw a lot of COVID
because mm-hmm.
it was like that time, and it was a bunch of kids that had it, and they all just looked like they had a little stuffy nose, you know?
Oh, we did not pull up babies. I had to give my first ever vaccine was actually on a 2-year-old at a clinic. I felt so bad for that.
My
kid.
First IM injection was on an 8-year-old. Aww. And it was
I just felt like I did it perfect, but I just like this kid was so cute, like little literal angel. And he cried so hard after Aww. He got his shot because like he was so happy Dory and we just boop, boop, like right in and right out. And, but he was shocked. That was his first ever, like, because his family, like, wasn't, like, on the vaccine train until a little bit later. And, like, so this was literally his first vaccine ever. And I was like, I'm so sorry.
My first IM shot was on an 8-year-old, and it was Rocephin. Mm. Have you ever given Rocephin IM?
I hear it's, like, very, like hard.
It's very,
very
thick.
Sluggish.
No one tells you that. They didn't tell me that. But the doctor was nice and ordered it to be mixed with lidocaine.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't hurt as bad for him. But I had to do it in his little leg because it was the only place that he had a little chunk. And he was looking at me and I was looking at him. And I went to like, and I was like, slowly pushing it. And then I was like, looking at it. And he looked at me and he put his hand on my shoulder. And he goes, you can cry. And I was like, okay.
Like, cry with me.
I'm like, please cry with me. I was like, oh my gosh. And then, you know what the doctor did? He comes in and he goes, here's a sucker little guy. And I was like, oh, you get to be the nice guy.
I had to go, because they didn't have suckers, so I had to go find somebody with a sucker to give to this poor crying 2-year-old.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, please don't deter this from getting him more vaccines. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. I'm going to cry about how little guy. I'm so sad. Let's talk about, did you do the school nurse one?
No, I never got to. Everybody said they had some wild experiences.
I
ended up going to the OR twice. Like, instead of...
No wonder you saw so many orthopedic surgeries.
Oh, my God.
Let me tell you about the school nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Saints.
I would never.
Mm-hmm. I went to a middle school, and when I tell you that was scary experience, it was a scary experience. The nurse I was with was so calm. She knew all of the kids' names.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, we have multiple middle schools in our town or our city. So, like, it's not like it's a small school. Like, I went to a small school for high school and middle school. Where, like, my graduating class was 26 people.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was 300 and something.
Yeah. So, this was, like, an experience for me. But my mom was a jail nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, this is the only thing I can equate it to. And the nurse actually said this to me, and I giggled because I was thinking it. She was like, it's like Gen Pop. You just gotta, like, watch them because there's, like, fights. There was, like, fights breaking out. There was kids doing drugs at school.
I was gonna say, I heard from several different people that went that just, like, the drug use is insane.
They're middle schoolers.
And this is, like, a population of, like, 13, 14-year-olds. Like,
yes.
Because that's, like, that's all that's left. And, like, because we have so many different, like, school levels now.
Yeah.
Like, the middle school is literally, like, 13 and 14-year-olds. How many of you are doing drugs?
Where are you getting drugs?
Where
at 13 or 14 years old? Where are your parents?
I literally, like, I must have been just, like, under a rock my entire life.
I think I've been under a rock.
I'm like, how do you get those?
Yes, and this nurse was just like, oh, okay. It was shocking. But she, I did see, like, obviously she does a lot, but she would, like, walk around and, like, check on people. She would check the bathrooms because that's where the kids were doing the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But they had, at my school that I was at, they had, like, I don't want to call it, like, they used to call it special education. What do they call it now?
What do you mean?
It's something different.
What do you mean?
Like, the kids that weren't in, like, they need more
IEP. I don't know. Is that not what they call it?
IEP kids. They have, like, a special room for those kids where they can, like, go and just, like, have their time. It's, like, mm-hmm. part of their education plan. And, that's where she likes to hang out. And so she would go in there and hang out with those kids. And those kids were so fun.
Yes.
They were, like, so excited to see her. They always asked her, like, health questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because they knew she was a nurse. And so they would ask her, like, all their, like, little health questions that they had. Like, I know there was one girl that was, like, talking to her about her period and, like, things like that. Like, she got to do the fun education, I think.
I know.
Where, like, you're building them as a human.
I was going to say, I think you do a lot of education as a school nurse.
She had a lot of kids that had to have, like, medication and stuff. They had a lot of, like, type 1 diabetics there. So I was like, I did a little research after that, and I guess it's, like, really on the rise, like, the numbers of kids that are type 1.
Well, I think we screen sooner.
We do
different screenings now, too. I don't know, but I mean, like, I know you give a lot, I guess I don't know, because I wasn't there as a school nurse, so I feel like you probably give a lot of medications, right?
Yeah.
And then you
probably... A lot of first aid.
Yeah.
And she did, she's the nurse for our school district that does all the vaccine screenings.
Mm-hmm.
So she has to prove that the kids have records.
Oh, yes.
Because it's, like, required, you know, like, they have to have certain vaccines or whatever, or they have to have, like, specific paperwork saying why they're not getting vaccines.
Yeah, 1 year my, like my stuff got lost, and they literally, and for some reason, like, my mom would send in that I did get my flu shot, and, like, she would give them that, and they literally threatened to kick me out of school.
Because they're like,
we're not getting it, and so my mom literally was like, just give her another one.
It's not going to kill her.
Two flu vaccines.
You're like, damn it. When I was in middle school, my mom would just bring them home from work whenever they did the flu clinic, mm-hmm. and give them to us. And she always made me have the big needle. My little sister's got the little ones. I was like, you're mean.
You're a little loser.
She was like, it's all that was left. I'm like, you're mean.
They're like, you liar.
Oh my gosh, there was a funny story. My sisters and I, one of the nurses that worked with my mom at the family clinic that uh-huh. she worked at when we were kids, we used to call her Mean Mary because she always gave the vaccines because she was so quick at it. But she literally one time like stabbed me and was like that and it was done. And I was like, oh my God, I was so scared though.
At the primary care I used to go to, all the nurses are very seasoned.
Yeah.
Bam, bam. Like in and out. Like yeah. I wouldn't even notice. And I was like, when are you going to do it? And they're like, done. I'm like, oh.
She was the nicest lady, right. But we used to call her Mean Mary because of the vaccines.
Well, sometimes you got to be the mean person.
I know, right?
Well, at the end of the day, whatever you want to do. If you want to be a school nurse, that's also kind of more of a 9-to-5 gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the nurses on my floor is like a fill-in school nurse.
Like substitute school nurse?
Yeah, for the school district, and she loves it.
Yeah.
She's like, it's just enough that it's like, I get to interact with them, but I'm not like stuck there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She has a bunch of side gigs. I love her.
Good little side hustles. All right, next.
I think the last one we have, so I feel like I'm talking a lot. Sorry, guys. I did my preceptorship at hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've told you a million times, but I'm going to tell you again all of the cool stuff. I, first off, loved hospice.
She's going to be a hospice
nurse. I'm going to be a hospice. That's going to be my retirement job. I loved hospice so much because it felt very rewarding to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And very, like an honor almost to be taking care of these patients in that time.
Yeah.
But also, like, we had a couple patients that were there the entire time. I was there for my 8 weeks. And the relationships those nurses had with those patients and their family was just like next level.
Yeah. I don't know if I would want to be that deeply acquainted with people.
I don't know. I love it. They have like the volunteers that they have at our hospice center were so cool, but they have a couple patient families that like bring them food every month.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, or like snacks, or like they'll deliver flowers for the nurses. It's really sweet over there. I really like it. Our hospice center is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, yes, it is.
Compared to, like, some... Because I did one for my CNA.
This is a little morbid, but when I was there, and I was looking around, and I was like, I would die here.
I would die here, yeah.
It's very nice.
It's so nice. But I learned so much there. One of the cool things that I think a lot of nurses don't get to see is we can do sub-Q IV lines, like, peritoneal fluid lines.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to learn how to place the sub-Q lines for the Dilaudid pumps that they have over there. Because patients would come over with IVs, but if they went bad, we didn't poke them again for that. Like, in a sub-Q line, doesn't really hurt that bad.
That's very nice of you guys.
Yes. Or if they had a port, we would leave their port accessed.
Mm-hmm.
We also use the MACI catheters, which,
yes,
everybody should get on board for your patients who can't swallow pills. It's fantastic. Go
petition.
I'm doing it.
Yeah, put in a bright idea.
I've been petitioning.
Put it in. I know you haven't done a right idea yet.
No, but for our...
Do it.
I know. For the like a lot of nurses, I've talked about this and they're like, what is that? It's basically a Foley catheter for your butt. And it goes into, they call it your rectal vault. It's like far enough in that the meds metabolize in there and then you can give oral meds through that catheter.
This is dumb though, but like, what if they have to have a bowel movement?
You just take it out.
Oh. How do they know?
If they have a bowel movement and they're not like cognizant, mm-hmm. obviously, because in hospice, like you get to that point where you're not cognizant anymore, yeah. right? It just comes out. It just like pops out. It's not very, it's literally the size of like a 16 French Foley catheter.
Oh, got it. Okay.
But it's got like
a couple. Oh, that's not big then.
No, okay. But it's got like a couple little extra ports for like stuff to come out so that it can, when you're pushing the meds in, and it's only, you can only put like 8 mils. In that little rectal vault before it like feels like you have to push, you know, for like a bowel movement.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be like, you have to time your meds right if you're using that. But it was the most comfortable I've seen hospice patients, because obviously like on our oncology floor we deal with the hospice patients, we do the inpatient hospice, and I wish we had them at the main hospital for that reason, because we have a lot of patients who become unable to take meds.
Yeah.
And instead of just like pumping them full of, or like not, like sometimes it's a comfort thing to give them meds and for them to not be able to get it because they can't swallow anymore kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice to have like another route.
Yeah.
Also, that NG tube that I had that got clogged, that would have been a nice little...
Yeah, probably.
Yep. For our patients who can't swallow, it'd be fantastic.
I gotta adjust. Turn a little bit here because I am...
What was the other thing? Oh, the other cool thing about our hospice center is they have the whirlpool. Have you seen the whirlpool?
Yes, I got to use the whirlpool. It's like a big giant jet tub.
It's... And it like moves up and down, so like once it's full, you can like adjust it to like whatever working height you need, which is great for like the nurses and CNAs. But I think the coolest thing over there was watching the nurses always made sure the patients that when they came in, they got a bath. They called it their spa day, and they would just like lift these patients up in the Hoyer lift, put them in the water, and you could just immediately see these patients relax.
Yeah,
and
like it was less gravity, you just feel like less pressure on your body.
And it was so much easier to get them comfortable and keep them comfortable
I was there at the hospice, the day, like, I actually didn't watch anybody pass away or anything. I actually ended up watching people discharge from hospice. You can discharge from hospice, in fact.
So, I think it's interesting. Have you seen the dilaudid and morphine nebs?
No.
Did you know that you could nebulize them?
Yeah.
Okay. So over there, they give dilaudid and morphine nebs for respiratory stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're actually testing out a new respiratory protocol with the doctor over there. And they have gotten people who've come over there on like 15 liters of oxygen down to no oxygen and breathing on room air at like 90%. It's crazy.
The day I was there, there was one lady, I actually felt really bad for her because she had gotten such good care, that she was no longer hospice criteria because her body like was actually able to heal with the close enough care, like the one-to-one care. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's not one-to-one. It's like one to six.
One to six.
Yeah, like our normal floor ratios. Yes. But like I said, sometimes people think that nobody does anything at hospice, and I have to correct them, and I'm like, this girl for running their booties off every time I was there.
There's two nurses and two CNAs for every shift, and they run that whole thing.
So, yeah, she actually was, like, leaving back to her nursing home that neglected her
and sent her to hospice. They get so upset.
Yeah, she just had nowhere else to go, and they were going to connect her with a social worker to see if they could get her somewhere else. It's just insane that you could get a good level of care and you don't even need hospice anymore.
And that's just, so we have the inpatient hospice team and then they have outpatient too. And, that's a whole different team of nurses and CNAs and nurse practitioners that go out to people's homes and do home hospice, which I think is really cool. Cause I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, you go there to die. But a lot of those people, like there's one patient that's been there for over a year.
Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah,
like she's so expensive.
Yeah, she's they do charity over there, so she's like, because she has no family, so they're basically like taking care of her, but she is like technically like hospice criteria. But and they take such good care of her, they love her so much, it's so cute.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yes.
See, it's always nice to get good care,
but like they just opened they have like a pathway through a garden with this huge fountain, and they just opened it and they made the paths big enough that you can roll the beds. I was there just at the like beginning of spring where it was just warm enough to take people outside, and that was really fun to take patients and walk them down the path and like get them some outside time and to see. Anyways,
hospice fan.
You're
busy there.
Don't get it wrong. You're busy there.
You're gonna be busy no matter what you go to. It's busy, just a different kind of busy.
Yeah, there's one girl that's worked over there since she was in grad, and she's like,
yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to our next one. I know you said you don't have any more on that list, right?
I don't have any more on this list.
We need to talk about the big ones. I would say part of the big three.
The big three, where everybody wants to go.
We have the ED, and then we have the mother baby. We already talked about it. I feel like those are the trifecta. I feel like those are the big kind of like names in healthcare right now that people kind of gravitate towards.
Yep.
Especially when we have the conversation of ratios, because I think that's a really big part of it, is just being able to give better care at a lower ratio, like having less patients to take care of. That's a comment for another day. Anyways, at the end of the day,
that's a hot topic. We'll put our thoughts out there eventually on that one.
We will. I hope we do get to a point where we can like have that conversation.
So I think that compared to what I've heard about other hospitals and like what happens at other places, I feel like our hospital, I think we got a pretty good ratio. It still kind of sucks. But it could be way worse.
I don't know.
I don't know. It could be way worse. I don't know. It could be way worse.
I think we are coming more into our own autonomy as nurses. Mm-hmm. Like we're being given more things to do.
More
tasks.
And
more things to supervise. And our ratios are not changing in accordance to
the added workload.
The added workload, yep. If that makes sense. Yep. Like, it's just, it used to probably work with that many people in, you know, one nurse, but it's not anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of unsafe, especially, I think, with kind of, like, the view of healthcare workers, especially when you're coming in and you know nothing about healthcare.
Yeah.
And you want everybody to be doing everything perfectly. Like, you know, they don't,
yes.
There's no, like, human in healthcare. Like, that's...
That's an issue.
That's an issue.
That's an issue for another day.
But yeah, but it's just like, it's a, like, so either we could, you know, continue saying, well, we're only human, we can only do so much, or we can just take the initiative and lower our own workload, yes. And then everybody's happy.
Agreed.
But that's another conversation for another day. Yeah. Anyways, moving on, ICU, my new grads, get ready to feel stupid. Fucking I have not talked to one ICU new grad that hasn't said, I feel so dumb going in every
ICU
single day.
ICU very rarely hires new grads. Have you noticed that? I've only ever seen two people go to the ICU as a new grad.
Well, I don't think you should. It's a hot take.
It's a hot take. I don't think you should either.
It's a hot take because I know there's a lot of people that want to go straight into it. Yes. I am of the part of the group that thinks I would not do well if I were to immediately have gone into the ICU.
I think like we said earlier about the med-surg, you need the time. And I'm not saying you should start on med-surg, but I'm just saying, like, that would be a good place, like I said, to hone your skills. Because you have the opportunity to do skills over and over and over, so you repetitively learn and become competent.
I would hate to say, we're not dragging anybody that immediately did go from new grad to the ICU.
No, and those nurses that did that are very, 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 like, that is
but
their
jam. But I think they probably, and I would speak for them and say that they probably were under so much more stress than maybe
somebody had. Oh, yeah, they told me they felt so stupid.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think... compared to maybe taking 1 to 2 years and getting your experience on another little bit, like, or even a step down, I would highly suggest if you're wanting to go to the ICU and you don't want to go to a med surge, do a step down instead. Mm-hmm. Like, find somewhere that does that. That way you're dealing with somewhat critical people that are coming from the ICU, but it's not as serious, you know? Like, there's still time to learn things. It's just such a fast pace up in the ICU. Like, you have the ventilators, you have, like, all these very, very highly dangerous drugs that you're titrating.
And it's
and you're watching.
Detailed.
And you have, like, you're sending these people down for surgeries. You are doing assessments on them, like, every hour for the first couple hours. You're doing it every 4 hours at a minimum. You're doing, like, it's just, like, very intense. You're doing a bunch of drips, usually. You are caring for these people that are literally at death's doorstep. And you have to be very knowledgeable because there's a lot more autonomy. Like, it's probably the highest level of autonomy you'll get in nursing at a bedside level, at an RN level, if that makes sense. Because they have so many protocols that the nurses are allowed to do on their own. But it's just, like, it's very serious. You need to be ready for that.
And I like that they have protocols up there. I wish we had more protocols on the floor.
Well, and the doctors are, like, they're just, like, they trust their team and everything, right? Like,
yes.
When... the nurses recommend, because, you know, we don't diagnose, but we say, hey, maybe this could be helpful. The doctors are usually like, yeah, do that. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and order that for me. Well, not order that for me, but I'll put the order in for you. Yeah, so you're doing a lot of things. I highly recommend shadowing before you go to the ICU.
Yes.
To see if you can handle the pace. Because you're going to get some very sick people.
Shadow nurses in general. Like, if you're interested in... a lot of places will let you shadow if you're interested in a position.
Yes.
Because it's one thing to get hired and then, like, find out it's not for you. But if you, like, go and see and you're like, oh, yeah, I don't think I'd like this. Or I would really love this. I think I would work out... it would work out really well for me. Start making those connections, too.
Yeah. I would say that. Especially if you're going to go to the ICU or the ED. Like, they're very competitive environments.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of people that want to do it, so you need to make yourself kind of stand out if you're wanting to do that.
Yes.
So that's kind of, like, on the ICU. But honestly, I feel like if you want to go to the ICU, like, you know, like, what's happening in the ICU. That's not really something we need to super elaborate on. And then in the ED, same thing, shadow it, because it's a very fast-paced environment. We have several new grads in our cohort at our hospital that are in their ED residency, and every time they talk, it just sounds insane.
I know, I'm always like jaw dropped when they tell us stories, and I'm like, oh my God.
I know, I'm just like, you guys are crazy. What? It's lawless down there.
They are the MacGyvers of the medical world.
Literally, like, you know, it's the ED, like, you see anything and everything. You have to anticipate everything. And you have to be ready for anything.
Yes. Like, you don't know what your shift's going to be like when you walk in.
I know. I'm like, I don't know if I would want to do that as a new nurse. I'm like, girl, I barely survived my medical residency. You know what?
Some of those girls are, those girls down there are.
No, that's a teach. I just think, I'm just saying, like, I can do it. Like, teach their own. But go shadow. Make sure you know what you want to do with that before you go and sign up to be in the ED residency.
Well, and I know our hospitals, they're rolling out this new ED residency in partner with the Emergency Nursing Association. And so our new grads that are in our cohort are basically doing two residencies.
Yes. And it's a lot of education. It's our new grads, you're going to have to get really good at giving report to anybody. It's like you're going to be talking with the doctors very closely. You're going to be talking to floor nurses very closely. So have your shit together.
And us floor nurses ask really stupid questions.
We do.
Sometimes I'm like, sorry, you already told me that.
Oh, gosh. Like, you're just going to have to get really good at communicating and looking for the, like, the weird details. I think they do a lot more, like, focus assessments than they do
The ED is so...
Oh, but you know what? Here's my gripe. Please do your patient care before you send somebody somewhere. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I know you all are busy. You are very important people, but there is no reason I should receive somebody soaked with urine and feces.
That's a nurse etiquette.
That's a very hot take. We have a nurse etiquette.
We have a nurse etiquette. We'll talk about it on the nurse etiquette episode. Yeah, there's a couple things that I'm like, come on. I know what's going on down there. I know your life is
crazy.
We're not
pit each other against units type people. Like, no. Everybody's got a very important job and we'll do it when we do it. But that's one of my basic human decency things. Don't do that.
We'll talk about it on the next episode.
You have texts.
You have texts. You have
mouth. I don't know. That's my salty thing. Laura's a little salty about that, but that's okay. At the end of the day.
Is there any other units you saw?
Oh, let's think here. So we went over the SONU, tele, ICU.
We kind of went through our whole hospital.
Medical,
almost.
Oncology. We did the cardiac, like, outpatient clinics, mother baby outpatient clinics, public health, those are the big ones, med spas.
Oh, did you do the endoscopy clinic at the VA when we went to the VA?
No.
I got to peek in on one because one of the other girls picked that one and I picked the floor that day. That was pretty cool. I don't know what goes on there, but I was like, I could go do that. It's another one of those, like, procedural areas.
Like outpatient sort of thing?
Yeah.
Med spas.
Med spas.
My new grads who think you want to do
nursing
that.
Jobs where we can wear pink scrubs. That's
Get
what we need
very
in our
good at your IVs. You don't want to be giving bags of, like, vitamins and stuff.
Yes.
Oh, and make sure you find somebody reputable. I feel like that's
Did you see what happened in Texas?
No. Let me finish my thought. Okay, I'm finishing it. Anyways, find somebody reputable. I feel like they're becoming, like, a new and hot topic for non-bedside nursing jobs. However, some things get a little sketchy. Like, sketchy. You need to make sure, like, it's a reputable company. If it's a small business that's opening up, look up the doctor, because you have to practice under a doctor. You are not licensed on your own to be doing that dumb stuff.
Yes.
So make sure you know your state laws and regulations if you're going to do that.
Yes.
That's my only big thing. And I think it's a perfectly acceptable job. I'm literally so excited for anybody who does it, but be very careful.
Did you see what happened in Texas with that? No. They had a med spa clinic. I will attach the I'll put under our references for the episode, I'll put the link to the news article on TikTok that I saw.
Yeah.
But there was a lady that was just arrested in Texas who was working at a med spa and was not a licensed professional and was starting IVs and administering IV medications.
Jesus.
And they just arrested her. Crazy.
I mean, I saw that story of that one lady down at, what was it, Florida, who was practicing as a nurse for, like, almost 2 years.
Yes, and she had never gotten a day.
Well, she had finished nursing school, but she never took the NCLEX and was just like, I'm just not going to do it. And everybody just hired her because she used somebody else's name on her license to say that was her. So she was unlicensed, but using somebody else's license that sounded like her name.
Oh my God, that's so scary.
Crazy stuff. Crazy. Well, we are officially licensed. You can look us up.
Yes, we are. No, I saw that today. I was like, oh my gosh. I sent it to our TikTok account so you can look in the little messaging piece.
Oh, I'm going to have to. I haven't made it there yet. But yeah, so really at the end of the day, wherever you're going, I think that's our biggest thing for the episode is shadow. Get in touch with whoever.
Start making connections.
Yeah, like wherever you want to work, like you need to go in and you find friends and you make friends and then you shadow.
Nursing is a community.
Yes.
And we are a quote-unquote small community. I mean, there's a lot of nurses in the nation, but everybody knows somebody. So the more connections you make, the more people you're going to know because you're going to have connections to people that can help you get where you want to be or teach you new things.
I know a lot of the jobs that a lot of our like higher paying nurses, you know, like things that you wouldn't even think existed anymore. Uh-huh. They literally only got the jobs because they just were like, they networked and people knew them and they just were like,
there is a drug diversion person in our hospital. No idea. How do I know that? How did I not know that? Craziness. Like it's not about what you know. Sometimes it's about who you know. So, you know, start building those connections, start figuring out where you want to go. And those are just the jobs in our community that we saw that were not bedside jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a rather small city.
Yeah.
Compared to
others. We'll have to look it up and see if there's like different like bedside or non-bedside options that you can do that. Like right out of residency, if that's not, because I know there's like health informatics nursing.
Yeah. Where you or if you guys know stuff. Anybody.
Yeah.
If you guys know anybody, send us the info, resources, whatever.
Drop it in the comments what your non-bedside nursing job is and how much you love it, you know?
Like, yes.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. But I think, is that the end of our episode?
Yeah. You got anything else you want to tell the people?
I know. I think I'm good.
Yeah.
I think I'm good.
Bye. It was nice seeing you guys.
All right. Thanks for yapping with us.